Well, I think maybe what I'd like to do next here is to talk a little bit about what's been happening on the in the civic and political world of Cambridge. In particular, we had a couple of meetings of the Cambridge City Council that were, well, if I'm going to be kind, I would say interesting. If I were to be more honest, I would say a little bit on the more horrifying side, but maybe I'll sort of try and do a little bit of both here. So let me just draw attention to just a few things here. Pardon me as I'm doing a little bit of desktop cleanup. Anyway, hopefully we've got this right here. So the on May 18th, there had been a vote, or at least they began this thing about the so-called ShotSpotter technology, which had been used for better part of a decade or more, I think, for detecting gunshots and whatever. And that became kind of a big deal. And there was a vote, and then some subsequent votes that actually came to the council 2 weeks later, right? So again, just sort of, rattling through a few of these little bits and pieces here. Arguably well, I suppose from an objective point of view, the biggest item was the fact that the FY27 budget was being had been submitted a month earlier, and that was finalized with, I think, only Al Zuby choosing not to actually vote in favor of the general fund budget for reasons that are perhaps known only to her. But we are now over $1 billion, in operating budget for the city, which is not small change. Other things that went on, oh, actually came through here in the June 1st meetings. There had been an order. Actually, I'll just sort of read this as I say it here. That it was one where they wanted to city council called on the city manager and city administration to stop using Twitter for city announcements and things such as that. So of course, the way it works in our system is that the city council asks the manager to do something. The manager could say no, but then that could create some problems for the manager. So they did come back with sort of a whole social media platform usage policies, which did in fact include the complete eradication of the use of Twitter, even though it was probably the most viewed of all of the social media platforms for the city. But hey, if the city council says ban it, I guess you ban it for reasons that I'll never really understand. So that's one thing that happened. The there was a at the May 18th meeting, there had been a so when it was this close vote, 5-4 vote to asking the city manager to remove the ShotSpotter system, the technology for detecting gunshots, which, again, I've made no secret about the fact that I thought that was a stupid vote, and I'll stick by it. But again, it was originally offered as a please, Mr. Manager, we request that you remove this. But then, I guess just to sort of hammer home the point, at the June 1st meeting, Al Zuby and a couple others came back with an order saying that under the City Council's Surveillance Technology Ordinance, or similar such name, we have the authority to approve or disapprove certain technologies that involve surveillance, which arguably then the ShotSpotter would be included in that. So they then chose to invoke their authority to say to the manager, let it be gone immediately, period. It's not no longer a request. And that was kind of interesting. You could argue that was unnecessary because the manager was probably going to comply anyway. But City Councilor Tim Flaherty had actually done a little, did his homework and said, well, according to the ordinance, if you want to ban this under the surveillance ordinance, there are certain things you have to ascertain. in order to do that. So he had he there had been a this new order that just said ban it outright. And then he was came in with a bunch of amendments to sort of say, well, ban it after you go through the following procedures, which are required under the ordinance. But he never got a chance to even introduce the amendments, even though there were printed copies all around for everybody and all the councillors had it, because Ms. Al-Zubi did something which, in the 40 years that I have been paying attention to Cambridge City Council, I had never seen anybody so arrogantly do such a thing, which was normally the mayor would sort of recognize councillors one after another. And then after everybody's basically had their say, oftentimes somebody would call the question, meaning, okay, it's time to vote on this. So everybody's had their chance to speak their piece. So before anyone got a chance to speak at all, the mayor, the problematic mayor Siddiqui, very, I think rather purposely called on recognize Ms. Al-Zubi, who then just called the question. Cutting off all discussion and forcing a vote. And as I say, in 40 years, thereabouts, I don't think anybody has ever done that. And there were other people in the city staff who said, well, that's new. We never saw that happen before. I thought it was one of the most arrogant things I'd ever seen. And but it happened. And so debate was cut. They took it to a vote, and it was the same five people who had voted to get rid of the ShotSpotter in the first place, voted in favor of the new one that absolutely said get rid of the ShotSpotter. The same two people, Azim and Zuzi, who had voted present, which I will never understand, continued to vote present on everything, refusing to commit to anything. And then Councillors Flaherty and Simmons voted flat out no. Just make pretty clearly expressing their point of view. It is sort of an interesting little twist that some of the people who were coming up in support of getting rid of the ShotSpotter were speaking as though somehow people from minority groups in the city, Black people in particular, somehow were would be thrilled to get rid of the ShotSpotter. They resented that. Yet, I think there's compelling evidence, but it is exactly the opposite. Is that people who are in neighborhoods where there is a threat of gun violence appreciate having early detection mechanisms in place. I don't think they fear the technology at all. I think they appreciate the fact that the Cambridge police are there on the job, doing whatever it takes to basically help promote and maintain public safety. I'm a little unsure whether a majority of the council really cares that much about public safety as much as they care about virtue signaling and things such as that. So anyway, that happened, and I think there was a follow-up to that that happened at the June 8th meeting, where Councillor Flaherty did introduce the amendments as he saw it that were required under the surveillance ordinance, and says, well, okay, Mr. Manager, you really should go through this here. And then I think he was right, but it was defeated. I think it was the same, just if I'm not mistaken, it was the same votes to squelch it that it pretty much gone along the same lines as the prior votes. So even if it was a requirement of the ordinance, they said, don't do it. Don't even go through any of it. Just Mr. Manager, do as we say, which was interesting. There were some other sort of hot topics that were coming up at that meeting. One of the things that I don't know, it became very, let me just say, I remember a quote from Frank Duhay. I think we were in a car at the time. And he once said about organizations, he said, the death knell of any organization is when they're spent find themselves spending too much time on their bylaws. And I've always remembered that. And it was certainly on my mind when the Cambridge City Council was going through in great excruciating detail possible amendments to the rules of the Cambridge City Council. The primary changes being, I dare say, things that were meant to limit public comment and even limit councillor comment, right? And give the mayor authority to basically cut off city councillors when they reached like having, because when she would feel that they were speaking too long. So anyway, that had been dragging on. So they actually, the discussion carried over from June 1st to June 8th, and then eventually they passed the new rules. Oh, actually, I think that was actually on June 1st. But then at the most recent meeting on June 8th, the rules were then in effect, which I think is actually not how it's supposed to work. My understanding is whenever you pass rules changes, they're supposed to lay on the table for like 10 days, which they never did. So they're just really eager beavers, we're going to change those rules now, damn it. And it was kind of an interesting show to watch Mayor Siddiqui cut off her colleagues mid-sentence in some cases, saying, "I've got a clock up here and the clock is ticking, so you better watch it," essentially. So that was, I don't know. I don't think this is an improvement. I've never been a fan of city councilors, blabbing on and on and on and on and on. But the thing is that I would rather them self-police or have another councillor, including the mayor, say, "Excuse me, councillor, could you wrap it up?" Right? As opposed to saying, "The clock is ticking, you've got 10 seconds left," and then shut up, which is now the new rule. So I intuitively have a feeling this rule will not last forever because every one of the councillors, every now and again, is going to want to talk at some length. And I think the notion about empowering the mayor to tell you to shut up is not something that ultimately that people are going to be happy maintaining, from now to the end of time. So let me say a few things that happened at the most recent meeting. There was no meeting yesterday. They canceled yesterday's meeting. It's actually remarkable how often the council, how it is remarkable how little the city council works. Uh-oh, did he say it? Yeah, he said it. They've got city council staff who do some of the background work. They cancel meetings at the drop of a hat. Now they want to end all their meetings by 10 o'clock. That's part of the new set of rules, so they can get everybody can get out of there. Not that I'm re recommending that they should be carrying on to 1:30 in the morning, which has been known to happen in years gone by, but still, just trying to like if you started a meeting at 5:30 and then you allow perhaps 2 hours of the public to just have their piece, and then you sign from 7:30 to 10, just try and cram in a whole meeting in there. Even if there's something sort of controversial, that seems a little too rushed sometimes. Of course, they can always suspend the rules, and they did on the very first meeting, and I'm sure they will continue to do so. But it just seems like they are basically trying to say, let's just get out of here. And I mean, they don't even have as many commuting meetings as they used to. They get free parking behind City Hall, and the city staff doesn't have access to. This is a very privileged group of people, I gotta tell you. Anyway, so at the most recent meeting, which was on June 8th, there were some relatively mundane things to be said, but I get, well, I'll just say quickly, the one thing they had was a 5-year progress review of the affordable housing overlay. And you say what you will about AHO, I've never been a big fan of it, but there is always it is a wonderful luxury to be actually be doing your own review and your own evaluation, because you can just give yourself all A pluses on everything. And that's exactly what that report did, says, "Aren't we wonderful?" I mean, I could summarize the whole report as saying, like, we're wonderful, everything we do is great, whether it is or isn't, that's another matter. The biggest number of people in public comment to come out were actually up for something quite mundane, literally mundane or earthbound, which had to do with grass. So there's Ahern Field in East Cambridge, and the city had determined that because of the intensive use in soccer primarily, they wanted to replace the grass field, or at least a portion of the grass field, with artificial turf. There's up in Danny Park, there are some parts that are pure grass and some that are turf. So they wanted to do his turf here. And the city had pretty much already made its decisions and said it was all a done deal. But then a lot of people came in there saying, we want to keep the grass. At least one city councilor, Sabrina Wheeler, made it really clear that the manager seems to have made up his mind. And we obviously have no say, which is a real problem with a current city charter. And we should be changing to a strong mayor system so that we can basically not have to listen to an administrator. So it actually turned into a threat to let's start changing the charter again to get rid of the city manager. I mean, that was kind of what was being hinted at during that particular discussion. Anyway, the meeting ended with the manager and the city staff saying, yeah, no, the decision's already been made. But I think pressure that was brought to bear, both publicly as well as privately, inevitably won out. And the manager changed positions and said, okay, fine, we're going to have it be a grass field. And we'll just have to do more intense, we're going to take some of the money that was used for that. We're going to do some improvements and extend the operating hours out at Danahy, put in some lighting, and just try and manage it as it is, and we'll see. Some people are saying, like, see, isn't this wonderful? The managers changed their mind, but or the you know, hey, the manager seems to change his mind a little bit more freely and more fairly than the city councilors often do. I mean, I can give you lots of examples of where there have been 1,000-person petitions to city councilors to change their view on something, and they just said, placed on file, ignore. So I'll give credit to the manager for being the more responsive of the two parties of the government there. So let's see. So what are some of the other things that went down? Well, something that was just not, it was apparently not even discussed, but something I found interesting was there was an order from put in by Councillors Simmons, McGovern, and Flaherty. Actually, I'm gonna flip to a picture here for this one. About there's an old retaining wall that's in the middle of Harvard Square, but you might never know about it unless you actually went behind some of the buildings to see it. But if this was back when the Charles River was tidal, and the river used to actually come right up into Harvard Square, there were inlets there, and they had to stabilize things because they were actually building some of the structures up where Winthrop Park is. So there's this building that, excuse me, there's this old stone wall that actually dates back to, maybe as early as the 1600s. I'm not actually really sure. I should know, but I don't really quite remember. So again, it wasn't discussed, but I was kind of glad to see that there was a city council order asking the city manager, the historical commission, law department, public works, everybody involved really to do what they can to develop a plan to stabilize, preserve, and restore the wall. And I am a preservationist through and through, and I was very happy to see that there was a little bit of attention being paid to this. The photo here, by the way, is one I took about 6 years ago. And even there, you can sort of see how all of the earth between the stones, everything is sort of dribbling out. The rats are getting in there. You can actually see some rat rat traps are back there. Needs definitely some work. In fact, I'll bet you if I were to go back there today, I'd probably go back and it would look even worse. So anyway, one of the joys and responsibilities of living in a historic city is you actually have to preserve the history, and that is definitely one part of the history of the Cambridge, even if it is somewhat hidden away. But then again, hey, buildings come and go. So maybe one day it will be more exposed than it is today. in sort of a future iteration. Now, another thing that happened was at the kind of relating to a prior meeting. So the ShotSpotter technology is now heretofore banned, and so there was a city council order from, I believe it was councilors Simmons and Flaherty, saying like, okay, if you're going to take away that technology, for the people who live in parts of the city where public safety is a day-to-day concern, which definitely includes areas where public housing is, are we going to replace the loss of one technology with additional mechanisms, maybe other technologies, better technologies? I mean, and listen, if somebody can convince me that there was a technology that could do the job, same job as the SpotShotter could, and do it in a way that where the wackadoodles at the ACLU didn't lose their minds over, then I'd say go ahead, do it, especially if it's cheaper, you know. Though I don't think this was a particularly expensive technology for us to have. Anyway, so it was an order basically saying, look, can we sort of look into some replacements for this, and if need be, or develop a what was called a neighborhood safety additions plan for the areas previously served by ShotSpotter. Well, that was made subject to the charter right by Councilor Simmons, only because I think it was just going to get beaten up again. There was another related order having to do with shot the one that we had from Councilors Flaherty and Simmons had to do with just basically following the letter of the law of the ordinance. And as I mentioned earlier, that was defeated on with only two votes in support, six against, and one voting present. Oh, actually, one was absent. Yeah, Councilor Nolan was not at that meeting. Anyway, it was interesting. Let's just say that. Now, I think the last thing I'll mention about this that most recent meeting, there was an order from councilors, I think it was from Zuzi and Flaherty, asking to look into some possible amendments to the last year's multifamily housing zoning changes. Basically, in response to some of the outcry that people have been having in with some of the particulars, and I think there are some, cooler heads have prevailed and realized there actually are some improvements that could be made. But we are kind of living in a kind of a dark time in Cambridge, where even good suggestions, if they go against the orthodoxy of groups like A Better Cambridge, who just say build more, more, more everywhere, anywhere, higher, deeper, thicker, no setbacks or whatever, to even modify that is like viewed as unspeakable, right? Anyway, so that was referred to the Ordinance Committee and Planning Board, so there will be some discussion, and whether it gets thoroughly squelched or not, I don't know. There's also a new zoning petition from Doug Brown and et al. That was calling for enhanced. Basically changes to limit some heights, some setbacks, and whatever. It is being characterized, whether fairly or unfairly, as some as an attack against the affordable housing overlay. I don't know that I really see it that way, because in my view, some of the provisions in the affordable housing overlay were excessive. And maybe scaling back some of the heights would be a good thing. In my opinion, by the way, if you want to have certain standards for things like green roofs or environmentally positive tech requirements of buildings, the same standards should apply to all buildings. You should not be exempting, quote, affordable housing, unquote, buildings from those standards. You either believe in the standards that you tried to that you passed, or you don't, you know. And if affordable housing is housing, then it should have the same standards as all housing. At least that's my take on things. Anyway, I don't know really where those things are going, but I think there was some obligation that as is, I suppose you could just not refer it, but generally speaking, any zoning petition does at least get referred to the Ordinance Committee and Planning Board as a rule. I can think of at least one exception to that rule, by the way, but that was referred. And so there will be meetings coming up in the weeks or months to come on that. So that should be coming. So let's see. It will be interesting, especially in light of some of the political things that are going on right now. And actually, speaking of the political, and again, I'll probably should save this for another day, but I think since it's not something I've actually spoken to at all, I'll at least mention this, which is that there are these various, this is an unusual year in that there actually are some political races that are where people are running, are not running unopposed. Certainly, I think everybody's aware of the fact that Ed Markey has a challenger, a principal challenger in Seth Moulton for the Democratic spot on that, and there are a couple few Republicans as well. So there's that. I don't think Maura Healey has a strong challenger amongst the other Democrats. Amongst the Republicans, I know there's a lot of money being spent from Michael Minogue in particular to challenge to run for the governor. So maybe there'll be a little bit of a race. It's not like we're without precedent of having all Democratic or primarily Democratic legislatures and a Republican governor. But I don't really think what's going to happen about that. We are having the rematch of Marjorie Decker versus Evan Mackay. They had a debate, if you want to call it a debate, up in Porter Square a few weeks ago that was interesting. I think Marjorie Decker kind of won that one. To whatever degree you can win a debate, I think Marjorie fared much better. In my district, Mike Connolly has a challenger in a fellow named Neil Miller. And again, I just view this as sort of a non-choice because Mike Connolly is just a crazy socialist, and Neil Miller is just an adherent of the Yimbys of the A Better Cambridge crowd. So if it's a choice between a socialist and a Yimby, I think maybe I'll just blank that one. Probably the biggest and most active of all the ones is the race to see who's going to succeed Pat Jaylen up in the second Middlesex Senate district. And tonight, actually at 7 p.m. at the Friends Meeting Hall at Longfellow Park, the five Democrats, Uyderhoven, I probably misspelled their name, Burhan Azim, Matt McLaughlin, Christine Barber, Tom Hopcroft are competing for that seat there. The word on the street is that Christine Barber probably has the upper hand in a lot of this stuff, but I think the way it often works with these races here, especially in a low, we'll see if there's a low or high voter turnout in the primary, which is actually before Labor Day. That sometimes it's all a matter of who turns out their people to vote in a low turnout election. So will somebody like Burhan Azim pull out his Cambridge base of ABC adherents? Christine Barber, will Matt McLaughlin bring in a lot of people from Somerville, et cetera, et cetera. So, we'll see who mobilizes their people. I'm not of the opinion that local elections are particularly representative. It's really more a matter of who can mobilize whom to produce as unrepresentative an election as humanly possible. So anyway, on that note, I think I'm going to just wind it down. So, hope to see you again one of these weeks, maybe later, well, excuse me, maybe early July. We'll see on Cambridge Inside Out.